Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio.
To an emerging forest, a safe place where we have the freedom to think about life without judgment. We take a look at society, we examine it, and we allow for the possibility of something new, something different. And now, here's your host, Alan Ritter.
Welcome, everyone, to this first Sunday night in May 2018. It's 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on the East Coast of the United States. And that means it's time for another episode of An Emerging Forest on Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Tonight, I'm very, very pleased to have a guest who was introduced to me by my really dear friend, Laurie Cagno, who's been on the show several times, great singer, songwriter, really a great creative person. And so she connected me with Scott, and Scott and I chatted a few times, and he decided he'd like to be on the show. So welcome to the show, Scott.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you for having me.
So Dave signed on in the intro, so welcome to the show, Dave.
Thank you, Alan.
So, Scott, could you... tell us sort of your summary for how you got started with your with what you do.
Well, that's a story that begins very early in my childhood. I was born in the early 50s in the Texas Panhandle, and growing up under that vast sky on that immensely flat plain of the Texas northern and central panhandle greatly influenced me. I think mainly just the environment primarily, but it greatly influenced me to develop my imagination. And when you're in such a vast and empty place, at least the way it affected me, I spent a lot of time reading and imagining how these stories I was reading would somehow play out in some fantasy life of mine, and spent a lot of time outdoors and in a community that was primarily farming and ranching, where everyone knew everyone. The doors were left unlocked at night, and kids were allowed to roam and were expected to explore their world. So under that vast sky, I could see thunderstorms approaching from hundreds of miles away. I could see the Milky Way every night stretching from horizon to horizon. So that's a perfect setup for a poet, at least for me it was, and as an artist. So my childhood was fairly normal. I mean, I spent a great amount of time outdoors, but I was also a voracious reader. Just absolutely couldn't get enough of the library, which was something that I attribute and thank my mother for, because she was constantly taking me and my younger brother to the public library to check out books. So I started reading very, very early, and I wasn't reading poetry as a child, but I was reading just about everything you could possibly imagine that a child might want to read. But I guess my first major experience that started to affect me as a poet and a writer, and maybe is something far beyond what we might consider the normal consciousness of a 6 or 7 year old boy, was that I had several early confrontations with death. And the first one was, I was about 6 years old, and my brother and I developed a disease called nephritis, which is an acute infection of the kidneys. And one of our playmates as well also became ill, and we were hospitalized, and Mark, my playmate, actually died. So we weren't aware of it at the time, but our lives were hanging by a thread, apparently. And even though we weren't told that, there was a feeling associated with that that gave me a sense of, all I can say is I started to realize how, even as a child, how impermanent and fragile our lives are and can be. So that was the first one. And then soon after, I was with my little brother, who was about 2 years younger than I, and we were given some money to cross the parking lot of the apartment complex that we lived in to go buy a comic book and a treat. And back then that was quite a bit of money for a couple of kids. But as I was leaving, my mother put me in charge of my younger brother. And as we were returning from the store, of course, my mother said, take care of your little brother and don't let go of his hand. We were approached by an older boy who was carrying a gun. And he leveled the gun at my brother and I. And I could tell it was a real gun because I could see the bullets in the chamber. And something came over me. I can't describe it in words, but something ancient and calm and at peace came over me. And I stood in front of my little brother and I said to this guy, it's not a real gun. I have no idea where that came from, but I knew there was something in me that was ancient and had been with me forever. And even as a boy, I was observing this and wondering, what is this inside of me? So the boy with the gun was so confused by my response, he lowered the pistol and turned around and walked away. And of course, as soon as that happened, I grabbed my little brother's hand and we ran into the house. And I was crying. I ran up to my dad's room. And I said, there's a guy out there with a gun. And he pulled a gun on us. He said, oh, it's a toy gun. It can't be a real gun. About this time, we heard sirens outside. And sure enough, he was the son of a police officer. And he'd taken his father's revolver and was threatening other people with it. So I'm only mentioning this story because throughout my life, I've had numerous brushes with death. Those are just the first two. And every single time that's happened, and especially as I got older, and you'll hear some of these stories on the program, I was given an opportunity to see something about being a human being that gave me some insight into who and what, at least I believe, we really are. And it wasn't too much after this that as I grew older, I started to write poetry. I think I wrote my first book of poetry when I was 14. And that influence was from Robert Heinlein. I had started reading Heinlein and read just about everything I could get my hands on that he had written. So this began my journey into poetry, and it also soon after began my journey into photography, which we can talk about later. But I'd like primarily tonight to discuss where these poems come from and really how, over the period of my entire life, poetry has come to me as a result of this growing awareness that we're much more than we appear to be, that we're much more than what we seem.
It's very interesting that you had that brush with an understanding that there was something incredibly ancient inside yourself. Do you have any more reflections on that being, or are we going to develop that as we go further into the show?
Yeah, let's just carry this forward kind of chronologically, because at 14 I'm writing poetry, but still a very normal kid from West Texas. I did all the things that all other kids do and thrived and
mm-hmm.
Became very athletic did well in school and had all those things going, but not having really a full awareness of what had been happening to me in those two previous experiences. But somehow looking back over that, of course, as I matured and grew older, there was more context for those of the two early events, which came much later, but it helped me to start to piece together how this life I've been living has been lived and why, and a lot of the meaning of that comes through the poetry that I write now. But just to continue the story, I had an extraordinary mother who taught me to meditate when I was 9. She was a deeply spiritual woman, gifted in many ways, kind and sweet and very good to us. And one of her interests was meditation. So she took my brother and I to meditation classes and taught me how to meditate at a very early age, which also was foundation for what came later. But I think I was in a very interesting environment, the vast plains of the Panhandle, under the care of a very aware and enlightened mother. And this helped me have an open and inquisitive mind. I think that vast sky with 180-degree horizons and living on that flat land where you could see the thunderstorms coming in the spring for hundreds of miles all contributed to the sense of wonder that continues to this day to come through the coins. So I don't know if I don't have any people who are actually listening to this or how many people are a part of this program, but I'm sure some of you have been following my poetry on Facebook. And I started this page about 2 or 3 years ago, but within the last year, since last June, actually, I think Facebook is running an analytics program on that for me, because so many people are now reading this poetry. And I think it's in the neighborhood of 2.5 million people have been reached through the Facebook site since last June. And to reflect on that now is kind of mind-boggling, but looking back over the course of my life as I continue to tell this story, it all plays out really through these experiences that I had with death, actually, the brushes I've had with death. And there have been multiple times that I faced death, and every single time I would go deeper into this self. And when I say the self, it's something far grander than our minds and our personalities and our stories. And so my poetry, I guess I could say, has been influenced by that primarily, but also the people that I was attracted to, the poets that affected me, that I read and have read most of my life. People like, Whitman and Dickinson and Robert Bly and Pablo Neruda, Mary Oliver, the mystic Persian poets, Hafiz and Rumi, and the amazing Cahil Gibran, Southeast Lebanese, E.E. Cummings. I mean, these people started to influence me and other teachers that I had along the way, but it all sprang from this early and deep realization that we're impermanent as people, that it's important to honor our humanity, but we're also divine. So this integration of being human and divine, it's not human or divine, at least from my experience, this integration is what we're all here doing. And integrating our humanity with and to and wedding that to our divinity. And it's a process. It takes a lifetime. You don't typically wake up one day and you're fully fully enlightened. That doesn't happen for, I think it can happen. I don't think it happens for many people, but I think for most people, we take a lifetime of living through these experiences, and these experiences become our teachers. So, to move forward, my family left Austin, I left Lubbock and moved to Austin in 1969. And I continued to do well as an all-district football player and National Honor Society, straight A's, very successful in high school in every conceivable way, was accepted into a lot of the major universities. And as I was on the precipice of this moving forward into life in that way, at 17, I had a, for lack of better words, I had a mystical experience. I had a an ecstatic experience. And that at 17 was, I believe, a culmination of a lot of the other experiences that had been affecting me, really. And I wouldn't necessarily say that this is related to trauma per se, in that I was not afraid of these experiences. I never felt fearful or in any way distressed by these things. I began to understand something about them. And at 17, when I had this experience, my life literally changed overnight. And when I emerged from this experience, I was not using drugs. I had not used drugs. If not 17, I was a pretty straight-laced kid. A little bit of beer drinking, but no heavy drugs, nothing like that, just a straight-laced kid. And I had, for a lack of better words, and of course I'm trying to say something in words that's very difficult to describe in language, but I had a realization through a physical experience that helped me to reach through what most people would call our minds. And I experienced the transcendent self. And all I can tell you is that it was a physical experience that filled my entire body and mind with sound. And the sound was Om. And it was so astoundingly powerful and pervasive in my experience that I could feel this sound and hear the sound at a cellular level. And there was absolutely no indication that it was coming. I had no, like I said, there was no drug use. There was nothing distressing going on in my life at the time. I was on top of the world. But when I emerged from this experience, everything had changed. I could see and perceive and feel things that I couldn't prior to this experience. I could see behind people's masks. I could feel the world in a different way. I could connect with nature in a much deeper way. And I could connect with people in a much different way. The only difficulty that I had was in finding people that I could connect with in this way. So that began a process of the next, really, I'm 65 today. So for 50 years, almost 50 years, from that moment at 17, I began a process of integrating that experience. And what it set me upon was an exploration of all the world's religions, I've read the Bible many, many, many times from cover to cover. I studied the Gnostic texts. I studied the Nag Hammadi Library. I studied the Gospel of Thomas. I'd studied all the esoteric aspects of the Bible as well as the traditional aspects. I studied the Upanishads, the Bhagavad Gita, Islam, the Sufis, you name it. I took that hungry mind that I've had my whole life and I put it to work, and I investigated everything you could possibly and explored everything you could possibly explore, find meaning for that ecstatic experience. And what started to happen during this period was the first poetry that started to come through. Now, when I say I'm a poet, I do write poetry, but it's more like it's writing me. It comes through me. I don't compose it. I don't typically even edit it. It just comes through, and I can feel a poem coming, like maybe you hear wind coming through the trees, and I'll sit down and I'll just be still, and that poem will come through me, and as it's coming through, I'll write it down. That's how the poetry works with me. So I just continue to explore. I found teachers like Ram Dass and who became a friend of mine, and Alan Watts, Terence McKenna, Gurdjieff and Uspensky, Russian philosopher, Stan Grof, Timothy Leary, Fritz Perls, Joseph Campbell, Carl Jung, Carlos Castaneda. I began reading Dickinson and Mary Oliver and Robert Bly and Pablo Neruda, like I said, Hafiz, Rumi, Gibran, Thoreau, Whitman, E.E. Cummings. And it just started to, this experience that I had just began to expand. And I realized that I did not want to become a teacher. I didn't want to write books. I didn't want to discuss this in public. I didn't want the attention. So I turned to art. And I realized that these kinds of experiences, first of all, are, for most people, I think, hard to believe. And secondly, they're very difficult to describe if you've had one. So I decided the best way to share this with the world was to share it with these poems, because the poems were coming through me. And the clearer I got about this, and the more certain I was that this was a legitimate experience for me, the clearer and the deeper the poetry became. So this process of integrating that integration of that experience continues to this day. And, of course, we don't have enough time for me to tell you all the stories, but I have explored every conceivable aspect of human consciousness at this point. You name it, I've done it. And I've done it to completely and totally and fully understand experience was bringing to me. And that the hearing of Om, of that sound that's, let's say, the song of the universe, I experienced it as myself. And then I also experienced it as everyone else and everything else everywhere at once. And so what do you do with that, right? So I began a series of practices to literally ask life to show me what love actually is. And I did have continued 20 years exploring that one question. What is love? And it's such a confusing thing for most people, and it was for me. But to be actually shown what love is was my mantra. That was my inquiry. So over the next 35 years, that's exactly what I've been experiencing through various relationships and with other people, with myself. I had children. I have one biological child. I've raised three others. I opened a very successful engineering and construction company and ran that as a CEO founder for over 30 years. I've thrived in business. I continue to do consulting work in that field. But primarily the foundation of my entire life was and still is standing on that ground, which was the ground of my being. So ultimately then, the poetry is an expression of that, but it's not mine. It's our poetry. These are our poems. They're poems for all humanity. I do not take credit for them, and they're not mine.
Could you read a couple of your poems?
Sure. Let me, kind of caught me off guard there, but let me read you a few here. Hang on a second. Okay, this is prose. We could call it a poem, but I don't title my work, but here's this piece. Has it ever dawned on you that loving you is the only way to ever know what love is? And none of us, well, let's say mostly none of us, were taught what self-love is. On the contrary, we were taught to meet our parents' needs and expectations, which was also their needs. Somewhere along the way, we all find ourselves there, living for everyone but ourselves. So I say, take off your mask. Quit that job you hate. Leave the fear and the lies. Take a deep breath. Jump. There's a feather mattress down there, a big old fluffy feather mattress. I promise you there is. Okay.
Very cool. When did you write that?
Oh, I wrote that last week, actually.
Last week?
Uh-huh.
What inspired it, or what, how did it come about? Meditating, or
they just come, Alan. There's no rhyme or reason to it. They just come. I'll read you another one. This is a pretty short one. There is nothing, absolutely nothing, more beautiful than you. Here's another one. I am happy living here with the purple martins and you, watching the dance of life soaring and playing so beautifully overhead. Spontaneous joy with no plan, no future, just the moon rising and a sky full of mystery and flight. And just happy to be here, enjoying the show with the purple martins and you. Here's a poem about, let's say, the patriarchy archetypally, and how it's dealt with or banished or refused or wounded the feminine on this planet. Why did we banish you? Why did we weigh you down with heavy stones and cast you into the deep? Why did we condemn you? Why? Why did we burn you at the stake? Which trial are you? Try to make you less than who you are. Why? Why can't we see that your beauty and your power cannot be controlled, and that your essence is creative and generous and life-giving, life-sustaining? Why for millennia now do fearful men run this world without you? Why can't they see that without you they are lost? When we are lost, men, turn your swords into plowshares. Drop your shields and masks. Find your Grail King and serve her. Serve her. It is only then that you will understand and know your true power. So begin your heroic journey. Be brave, and at the end, you will find her. You will find her in the center of your chest. Kneel there. Worship there. Show her what love is. Find her. Nourish her. See her before it's too late.
It's really great.
So
yeah, thanks, Scott.
My point.
So
yeah, this point.
We need. Hang on. Hang on there. We need to take a break right now. And so I'm going to play a song called How and Toe by Dave the Bard, and we'll be back in about 4 minutes. Take care, folks.
Okay.
See you on the other side.
Take no scorn to wear the horn. It was the crest when you were born. Your father's father wore it, and your father wore it too.
Pagan Radio. You can hear your favorite artists such as Dave the Bard, Tuatha Dea, Spiral Rhythm, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, and many, many more. Join us for exciting shows like Ask a Witch and Storytime with Rook as well. www.internationalpaganradio.com on the net or on TuneIn Radio on your mobile devices. Join us on Facebook and Twitter too. International Pagan Radio, all pagan, all the time.
Welcome back to an emerging forest on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. We hope everyone was able to stretch their legs and get a drink. And now, back to Alan.
Well, welcome back, everyone. And welcome back to our guest and my co-host, David Whitman. So proceed, gentlemen.
Hey, Dave.
Hey. The last one you read, is that a real recent one, or did you write that a while ago?
Oh, those have all been fairly recent. I write typically, or there's writing being done every day. So those are the last probably week or so.
Do you do any kind of spoken word with those, or do you, I mean, have you read those live at like maybe your openings of your shows? Or?
Well, I haven't read them live because they were just written, but I have read poetry live. I haven't read those in particular, but those have mainly been published on Facebook on a page I have there called Scott Lockhart, Writer, Poet, Artist, a Facebook page. It's a writing site. So would you like to hear another one?
Yeah. Oh, please.
Okay. I'll kind of preface this. The poetry that I've been writing that's been coming through took a different turn back last year. I spent time between Hawaii and Austin, and last March 31st, I was paddling offshore with five other guys in a six-man canoe, and I had a heart attack, and not really knowing what was happening. I thought I was just having bad indigestion. I didn't realize I was actually having a heart attack. I was in great shape, best shape I've ever been in my life. But I went home that afternoon after our paddle and put my feet up, and I had a second, much more serious heart attack. And during that second heart attack, I lost consciousness. And during that time of losing consciousness, I had a near-death experience. I actually left my body and found myself in a state that was free of whatever you would think of yourself as being, free of your personal self. And I experienced a state of oneness with everything again. So this was the bookend of the first experience at 17. So here I am at 64, and I'm having a similar experience under very different circumstances. So I was air ambulanced to Honolulu and went through an emergency heart procedure and recovered from that. But that experience, if there was any doubt at all that I might have ever had, gave me the certitude that there was something very powerful happening, not only to me, but to all of us. And it gave me a complete sense of freedom when it came to fear of death. And really, fear in general seemed to slip away. So this poem that I'm about to read is one of many poems that have come through since that experience. And this interest in this poetry really started to escalate after this event happened last June. And that's when the 2.5 million reaches have happened. It's just been phenomenal. I'm not taking credit for this. It's just something that happened to me that helped me be able to say a more clear channel for this poetry. So here is a poem that came through as a result of that experience. There will be times when life, like the sea, takes us away, takes us on the great journey, on mysterious voyages to the edge of the earth. Keep your sails furled, your eyes on the horizon. Listen to the ocean that lives in your heart. She will guide you. And if you fear the unknown, more the reason to go. Yes, even more the reason to go. So,
lovely.
This type of expression, kind of related to the transcendent, has been coming through very strongly now for about a year. And like I say, I'm really just letting it come through. And the responses, at least on Facebook, the comments have been astounding and very humbling. And I found a lot of gratitude for this work that seems to be helping so many people. So here's another one, for example. There are house wrens overhead building their nest under the eave. Just born monarchs dance on the blooming mountain laurels. Cardinals serenade as the ancient ritual and promise of spring and new life is being fulfilled. Yesterday, with towering cumulus clouds filling a deep blue sky, a squadron of Canadian geese organized above me. Their formation done, I could hear their call to fly north. They were going home. Have you ever considered that you too have this same infinite wisdom within you? Have you felt your own heart's guidance that is infallible? The certitude that you belong here, that your flow in the natural world and everything in it just is. Maybe it's time for you to trust your own migration, your own life under the sun, and turn home. Spread your wings, call out your holy name, and turn home. Just turn home.
You mentioned that you spend time in Austin.
Uh-huh.
Is that where you live most of the time?
I'm currently spending most of my time in Austin, but over the last 5 years, I've spent at least half of that time in Hawaii, on the Big Island.
And how long have you been in Austin?
Since 1969.
Oh, wow. Well, I lived in Austin from 2000 to 2007.
Yeah, it's a great place.
Yeah, yeah. So you were around for the Armadillo World Headquarters and that whole time
yeah.
period.
Oh, yeah. Spent many a weekend in the Armadillo. Great place. It's a great city.
Yeah.
I mean, still a very, very great city. Lots of music, great food, and a beautiful place.
Yeah, well, we have probably been in the same place and probably know some of the same people, I imagine.
Probably so.
I'm curious to know how maybe living in Austin has affected your creativity and your spirituality, since Austin is a very it's a vortex in a lot of ways, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's a great question, and you know, the natural world really affected me initially in the Panhandle. But the Austin portion of my life, the period of time where I was really starting to integrate those experiences, was the perfect place for me to be, because, like you said, it's a place where people gather from all over the mm-hmm. South and Southwest to do and explore these kinds of questions and to do their life maybe a little bit differently than they could if they were living in a small rural community. So, you know, the old saying, keep Austin weird. That's kind of the slogan or the motto of Austin.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like all the, you know, all the weird kids in the rural communities, the outliers and the kids that were maybe the artists or, you know, the kids that didn't want to be farmers or ranchers, there's nothing wrong with that, but kids that were maybe following a different star seem to have always migrated to Austin. So I didn't go there by choice. My family moved there in 1969, but
mm-hmm.
I'm very glad that they did, because that did allow me to have the resources to do this exploration. And other, of course, people that I found there that were also exploring consciousness that became my mentors and teachers and friends. So, yeah, Austin had a major, major impact on my development. And it was very fortunate that my family moved there when they did.
Do you live in South Austin?
I do, actually. I live in 78704, which is the area that's right south of the river. I don't know if you remember Austin, but there's a downtown river that runs through, and Lamar and Barton Springs, and of course the beautiful springs that's named after that area, Barton Springs Pool. I live very near there, and that pool has been a place where I spent many, many hours and done a lot of work there. Just a beautiful place.
Yeah, I lived in South Austin. I also lived off Riverside. And even the Arboretum, but yeah, I liked the great area. I spent a lot of time at Shady Grove because we did a music series there. I think it still goes on. Yeah. I was involved.
I live up the hill from Shady Grove, so I go
there
every morning.
So where, talk a little about your art. What is your art influenced by the same way that your writings are, or does it come from maybe more from your physical location?
I just decided to come from a family of very creative people. My grandfather was a practicing artist his whole life. My mother was a musician, played the violin. My father was into community theater. Just a strong art gene. So as I was working and raising kids, I also was trying to stay connected to art, which I have done through painting and pottery and silversmithing and poetry and writing, creative writing. I have a screenplay and a book, a novel written. I haven't quite finished it, but I've always stayed active in some type of art. My youngest daughter is a painter, has a fine arts degree from California College of the Arts. So we just have a lot of that artistic gene in our family. So that's that's been primarily my path, is the written word and the arts, and of course I was also a householder and have done a lot of spiritual practice, but also have done many things in the world that would be considered householding. And of course I do believe in near-death experiences are the primary driver that opened me to a consciousness that allowed me to understand where these poems are coming from. But how they fall on people and where has nothing to do with me, and I have no attachment to that. I just am grateful that it appears that many, many people have been responding to these poems in ways that are just astounding to me.
It's very true. I during the break, I talked to the callers, and one of the callers said, "No, I prefer to stay listening." That you'd actually touched her heart and helped her so much, and I'm fulfilled as the host by actually creating a place where something like that can happen.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you for inviting me to do this. I appreciate that.
So, if you have more to share, keep sharing, and we'll take it to the top of the hour, and then have a closing as we agreed.
Okay. Well, I guess the bulk of what I wanted to share, I've already shared, but the message, I guess, of this evening is to just simply trust yourself, and everything within yourself is a part of what it takes for all of us individually and collectively to return to a deeper place that's more authentic and, for lack of better words, once again, maybe a higher self. And all of the great prophets, from Jesus to Muhammad to Jesus to Buddha to everyone, all of them, everyone who's ever lived and walked this path that has taken that upon themselves to be a teacher, have always just urged us to love one another. And it may sound like an easy thing to say, but as we all know, it's sometimes not that easy to do. So if I have anything to share at all, I've had a life that has shown me what love is, and very often I've learned that by experiencing what love isn't. And so if there is something that I can share to the audience, is that I would ask you all to simply ask whatever it is that you believe in out there to be shown what love is, and to actually ask for that. And then just continue to ask for that until it comes, and it will. Your own particular answer, your own version of whatever love is for you will come. And it's a lifelong process. It's a lifelong answer. But these poems attempt to address that. So that's really my message tonight. It's just trust that within yourself that you've felt your entire life as being your guiding star, your deepest truth, your most beloved expression of yourself, and never give up on it. Never doubt it. And if you do, continue to ask to be shown what love is, because at some point, we all get there. We all arrive to that sense of certitude that who we actually are is infallible. It's absolutely reliable and predictable that we eventually arrive at love. And so keep trying, love on, and when you find something that's difficult to love within yourself or someone else, then you've got material right there to work with. So I hope my poetry continues to shine that light for people. And I thank you for this opportunity to share with you guys.
Thank you.
Yeah. Very welcome.
Thank you, Scott.
We're going to close now. Could you give your, where can people find you information?
The best way to locate my work is on Facebook. There's also a website. Facebook is Scott Lockhart Artist, Writer, Artist, Poet, or Scott Lockhart. There's two pages. And then there's a website, scottlockhartartist.com.
And, David, your contact information?
It's my email address, dwhitman0906@gmail.com.
And everyone, my name is Alan Ritter. I'm the host of An Emerging Forest. My email address is RITTER.ALAN88@gmail.com. I run a small produce club in the southeastern Pennsylvania and southern New Jersey area. And we try to give everyone a price break by getting together a bunch of just normal folks going across the river and buying cases of produce that are drastically lower than the local grocery stores in price. I would say they're actually fresher, but that's not something I advertise because they get turned over a lot quicker. That's a seller, that's a middleman. The other thing that's cool is sometimes things get a little ripe or there's an odd lot and they drop the price even further, so I'm able to pass along even better, greater savings. So overall, I just want people to eat more plants and more whole plants, less processed food. So that's kind of what I do as my main thing. This show has come and touched on a theme that is one of the carrying themes of an emerging forest, which is find your passion, trust your passion, be in your passion, dedicate your life or however much of your life you can possibly dedicate to exploring your passion and pushing your edges. So it's, I haven't been doing this for very long. It hasn't been 2 years yet that I have had a radio show or a podcast show, but the number of times that the same theme just echoes back is really amazing. And another amazing guest tonight just echoed that same theme. So I'm just fortunate to be someone who's pushing the buttons and saying a few words to pad us out till 10 o'clock because I have 78 seconds more to fill. And thank you once again to my co-host David, and thank you, Scott, for being a part of this. And we'll talk about possible future programs. Thank you to everyone who listened and everyone who will listen.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Alan.
And thank you, Dad.
Thank you.
All right. Well, this is the closing of another great episode. Thanks so much, everyone who listened, and have a great night.
For listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.